I'm Marty Moscoen. Welcome to Radio Times. This is a big week for special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into collusion between the Trump presidential campaign and Russia. On Tuesday, his team filed a sentencing memo for Michael Flynn, the short-lived national security advisor for President Trump, who pleaded guilty to lying to the FBI about his contacts with the Russian ambassador to the U.S. and has been cooperating with investigators. Michael Cohen, known as Donald Trump's fixer, pleaded guilty to lying to Congress about a Trump hotel deal in Moscow and had pleaded guilty to a series of financial crimes and campaign violations. Mueller's office is filing a sentencing memo for Cohen sometime today. His lawyers are asking for leniency. And Paul Manafort, who served as Trump's campaign chair for several months in 2016, pleaded guilty to conspiracy this fall and promised to cooperate with federal prosecutors. But it turned out he lied to them repeatedly, violating his plea deal, something Mueller's team is submitting to the court today. And just to add to the drama, former FBI Director James Comey, who was fired by Trump, is testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee today. Let me introduce our two guests who join us on Radio Times. Quinta Jorsek is managing editor of Lawfare. Nice to have you with us on Radio Times. Do we have Quinta Jorsek? All right, well, we will get her hooked up. Hopefully we've got Andrew Prokop, senior correspondent at Vox, who's been covering the Mueller investigation. Andrew, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. And while we get Quinta set up, let me put a couple of questions to you today. So what is Mueller's team? What are they actually doing today?
Well, there are two deadlines that are today, basically. So
yep, I'm here.
Okay,
good. Thanks, Quinta. Go ahead, Andrew.
Sure. So last week, Mueller announced the news, which was a bit of a surprise, that he had struck a plea deal with Michael Cohen, who had pleaded guilty to various tax, bank fraud, and campaign charges in a separate case in the Southern District of New York. So this is the first time Cohen has officially become part of the Mueller probe. And Cohen's sentencing is scheduled for next week on Wednesday. And so what's going to happen today for Cohen is that the U.S. Attorney's Office in New York is going to file the sentencing memo arguing how much of a incarceration term he should get. And Mueller's team is apparently going to file a letter of some kind to the judge. And we expect both of those by 5 p.m. Eastern time today. So I think the Cohen submission from Mueller is going to look pretty similar to what Michael Flynn's memo that Mueller submitted earlier this week, how that looked, which was, you know, you got a sense of how cooperative that Mueller thought he had been as a witness for Flynn. He said he had provided substantial assistance, but a lot of the details of what exactly that cooperation entailed were redacted in the public version of the filing. If you read the Flynn filing, a lot of it was just blacked out. And for Cohen, since we haven't seen any new charges being filed based on information he's provided yet, we know he's met with the special counsel seven times, but we don't really know where that's led. So, you know, if he has provided useful information, it's an ongoing investigation. So they're probably going to redact those details.
Quinta, let me get you into the conversation. Quinta Jorsek, again, managing editor of Lawfare. Nice to have you with us on Radio Time. Sorry about that rough beginning there. Talk briefly, if you could, and then I do want to dig deep into the Flynn memorandum earlier this week. What is going to happen with Mueller and Manafort today, Quinta?
Let me tell you, I wish I knew. So one of the interesting things about the Manafort filing the other week was that really just came out of absolutely nowhere. I don't think anyone anticipated that was going to happen. And so it will be interesting to see whether the filing today basically says, you know, Manafort lied to us about a bunch of stuff that's, you know, not really connected to the core of the investigation, or whether Mueller uses this opportunity as one more way to kind of get information out about what is going on. You know, if it turns out that Manafort lied to the investigators about stuff that's really, really crucial, which may be why the special counsel's office is coming down on him so hard.
Hmm.
So we're all going to be waiting to see what the answer is.
Absolutely. Well, let's talk about a bit about what we do know, although it was heavily redacted. And Quinta, I mean, in my line of work, I don't see a lot of sentencing memorandums. When you look at what was released earlier this week with Michael Flynn, was that unusual? Did it seem like more redactions than normal? What was your take?
Well, I'm not sure it makes sense to compare it to other memoranda, and I would want to dig more deeply into that before I opined on the matter. The redactions were definitely interesting, because what that tells us is that, you know, there's a lot going on that we don't know about.
Right.
Especially that it turns out there's a criminal investigation separate from the special counsel investigation that Flynn is cooperating in. That was listed first in the memo. The whole thing was redacted. There's been some reporting since then that the investigation pertains to Flynn's work with Turkey. But we didn't know before that memo came out anything about that investigation. So it's just kind of one more reminder that there are many, many threads here.
Well, Andrew, let me go back to you. We learned that Flynn was very cooperative with the special counsel, meeting something like 19 times. As Quinta just referenced, there are, I guess, three investigations of which he is at least, if not involved in, certainly talking about. And also this question about Turkey. It's a whole other story, I guess, worth investigating. But what was your take from the memorandum?
Yeah, it's interesting because the memo said that Flynn was cooperating in several investigations. And if you look at where the redactions are, it seems like that number may be three, but, you know, it's not entirely clear because
right.
So much of it is redacted. There's one criminal investigation of some kind that seems to be separate from Mueller's probe. And it's been reported by the New York Times and others that may be the probe into his efforts in 2016 to do various kind of undeclared lobbying and other sort of activity for a Turkish businessman with ties to the government of Turkey during the campaign in 2016. And then there's a section describing his cooperation with the Mueller investigation. And it talks a little bit about one topic that he cooperated on, which is contacts between Trump campaign associates and Russia during the transition period. So we already knew that Flynn was, you know, involved in that because he was the guy who was talking to
the Russian ambassador Kislyak, exactly.
Yes. So Flynn told Mueller something more about those interactions that seems to be redacted. And then there's another section of what he told Mueller that is totally blacked out, and we don't know what that's about. And then there may be a third investigation, or it could be, you know, another part of a Mueller investigation. I've seen some people theorize the third investigation could be the obstruction of justice investigation into Trump. But, you know, we don't really know. It's totally blacked out.
Well, Quinta, they did make basically, I guess, tell the judge, whoever's going to look at this, that they felt like Flynn didn't need to be sent to prison or jail for this. And there were also some key words that a lot of people have made a point about. Senior government leaders should be held to the highest standard. Some are saying that this was a message to Trump or others who are being ensnared in this investigation. Do you think those words are significant?
Yeah, I mean, that was definitely a phrase that caught my eye. I think it's possible to interpret that in a number of ways. You know, you could definitely read it as a message to the president. You could also just read it as a statement that, you know, Flynn was formerly someone who commanded a lot of respect. You know, he ran the Defense Intelligence Agency. He was a very well-respected intelligence officer. And it may just be a commentary on how incredibly far this guy has fallen. So I think you can read it that way. You can read it other ways. I would definitely withhold judgment on saying that it's definitely a comment to the president, mm-hmm. but I agree that there's a certainly an interesting tenor to it.
Well, and this Turkish cleric, he happens to be in the Poconos in Pennsylvania, but what do you make of what we know about that so far, Quinta, which is that Flynn was working with the Turkish government. They wanted to bring this cleric Gulen back to Turkey, looks like Flynn received something like $500,000 for some of his work involving Turkey. What do you make of all that?
It's an absolutely crazy story.
It sure is. Weren't they going to try to put him in a bag or something and drag him back to Turkey?
I mean, and if we're talking, you know, there's a name for that, and I'm just going off the public reporting here to be clear, but that's called kidnapping.
Right.
And it's, again, it's just absolutely crazy to see someone who is really at the highest levels of government reportedly, you know, plan to put Gulen in a bag and render him to Turkey. That was one of the threads of the investigation that showed up early on. You know, there was a sort of flood of stories around right when Flynn pleaded guilty and then kind of vanished. So it's definitely interesting to see it surface again.
Right.
But it's hard to say where it's going.
Well, and the serious part of this, Andrew, is that, you know, Turkey might have known what Flynn was doing, but the American public did not. And the same goes for his contacts with the Russian ambassador during the transition period, which is that Russia knew about it, but the American public did not.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And then, of course, the other question is what exactly president-elect at the time, Trump, knew about it. So it's a bit of a tangled tale what exactly happened with those calls to the Russian ambassador, but essentially President Obama announced new sanctions on Russia that were designed to kind of punish them for the email hackings and other interference with the 2016 campaign. And then Flynn had a series of contacts with Ambassador Kislyak in which he urged Kislyak not to retaliate, that Russia and Putin should hold back from, you know, doing anything too dramatic to respond. And then Putin did just that. He announced the next day that he wouldn't be doing much in response. And then President-elect Trump tweeted, "Great move on delay by V. Putin," called him very smart. And, you know, that all looked weird at the time.
Yeah.
People were like, huh, what's going on here? And then it only took a couple weeks for the secret calls between Flynn and the ambassador to leak out. But then he lied about the calls. He said that that he didn't even talk about sanctions on those calls. So it's still, I don't think we've gotten to, we still don't have the full story on exactly what happened, why Flynn did that, and what Trump knew about it at the time.
Well, let's take a very short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation trying to make sense of all the things that are happening this week involving the Mueller investigation. That's Andrew Prokop, senior correspondent at Vox. He's been covering the Mueller investigation. Quinta Jurasek also joining us as well, and she's managing editor of Lawfare. You can join us, 1-888-477-9499. Radio Times at WHYY.org. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moskowain talking with Quinta Jurasek, a managing editor at Lawfare, and Andrew Prokop. He's a senior correspondent at Vox. He's been covering the Mueller investigation, and we're talking about Mueller's very busy week. Let me play something. This is President Trump speaking to reporters on the White House lawn. This is November 28th, obviously just a couple of weeks ago, but he's also talking about Paul Manafort and whether he would offer a pardon or not.
The question was asked yesterday about pardons with respect to Paul Manafort, who, it's very sad what's happened to Paul, the way he's being treated. I've never seen anybody treated so poorly. But the question was asked to me by the New York Post, and I said, no, I have not offered any pardons. And I think they asked, or whatever, would you? I said, I'm not taking anything off the table.
So, Quinta, he's saying, I have not offered any pardons and I'm not taking anything off the table. Can we read the tea leaves there?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I think it's It's pretty apparent how Trump has used his pardon power thus far. You know, we see that in his pardon of former Sheriff Joe Arpaio, conservative commentator Dinesh D'Souza. He likes to throw it around as a toy he can use where he kind of can't be checked. And in the case of the Mueller investigation, you can think of that as kind of the ultimate escape hatch for him. It's one of the powers of the president that there's currently not really anything in the constitutional system for anyone to push back on. So I think it's absolutely notable that he's refusing to take that off the table, as he says, in the case of Manafort. Now, there's definitely a question of how much of an effect that would have for Mueller's investigation in terms of Manafort's cooperation at this point, right? We know because of the filing that Mueller's relationship with Manafort has already fallen apart. That being said, it's definitely true that at this point, Mueller's team still has, you know, some leverage over Manafort. Manafort could have a long dark night of the soul, wake up, turn around and say, you know what? I want to cooperate with you again. I have some more information. Let's work this out.
Does he have credibility when it comes to that?
That's an excellent question.
Based on his track record?
Right. We've seen that the special counsel is absolutely willing to bring the hammer down if he lies, right? That's what they've what they're bringing before the judge now is accusing Manafort of lying. So they would certainly be able to push back.
Andrew, let me get you back in on the conversation here. Do we know whether the acting attorney general, Matt Whitaker, we should say that President Trump just announced his pick to be the attorney general. But does Matt Whitaker, is he involved in any way? Has he recused himself? What do we know about his involvement in the Mueller investigation?
It's a big mystery at this point. So, you know, Whitaker was appointed the day after the midterms, and I believe that the Justice Department said at the time that, yes, he would take charge of the Mueller probe. But the reporting has been very hazy about whether that has actually happened. One thing that does seem to be clear is that Rod Rosenstein, the Deputy Attorney General, who was supervising the probe previously, does appear to be still involved. It's not like he was completely cut out of the loop as soon as Whitaker came in. So, you know, and then there are also all these calls for Whitaker to recuse himself from overseeing the investigation because of all of these comments he had made publicly attacking the investigation and defending Trump and so on. So it's and the Justice Department has not been responding to questions about what has happened, whether Whitaker has had an ethics review from career staff bearing it, on the question of whether he should have to recuse himself. So it is a big mystery there, I think.
And we should add that he has been a critic of the Mueller investigation. Let me get Colin from Philadelphia to join our conversation. Colin, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, yes. My question for your guests is, with Cohen and Flynn speaking to special counsel Robert Mueller, what does this mean for Trump? You know, where do you see him going from here?
And that's the great mystery, is it not, Quinta?
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, we saw the president was quite active on Twitter this morning. He had a long string of tweets calling the investigation a witch hunt, saying Mueller was conflicted, saying his lawyers were writing a counter report. And you can definitely read that as, he may be nervous about how close this is getting to him.
Well, and Andrew, on another tweet, I thought it was just interesting that also James Comey is going to be testifying today, making it, of course, a very busy day. And the president tweeted, Robert Mueller and Leakin Lion James Comey are best friends, just one of many Mueller conflicts of interest. And we know that the president has talked about a witch hunt. Why is Comey testifying before the Senate Judiciary Committee?
Well, they've been trying to bring in various top Justice Department officials to call them in for questioning about kind of the openings of the Trump-Russia investigation and the early days of it back during the Obama administration and the transition and the early Trump months as well, before Mueller was appointed, because he was appointed after Comey was fired.
Right.
So this seems to be part of the Republican strategy. They're really trying to turn over every rock of what happened back then to look for anything that they can say is unfair or, you know, that they can portray as political as means to discredit the probe. So we saw this, of course, in the case of Peter Strzok, the FBI agent who had a big role from the very beginnings of the Russia investigation. He turned out to have expressed his political views, his criticisms of Trump in text messages with a colleague. And this is something that that congressional Republicans helped make public and became a big criticism they launched to try to, you know, make the investigation in general look bad and discredit it as political.
Quinta, here's an email from Warren saying, is collusion in the description of Mueller's investigation mandate?
So that's an excellent question. I don't have the language in front of me right now, but the appointment order that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein issued appointing Mueller tasked him with investigating all contacts between Russia and the Trump campaign in the 2016 election, along with Russian interference in the 2016 election. So if you want to understand collusion, which, as we know, is a bit of a hazy term, as, you know, context coordination, then absolutely, yes, it is.
Andrew, you want to add to that?
Yeah, I will say that there was, you know, not the initial statement of Mueller's mandate, but a couple months later, Rod Rosenstein wrote up a memo laying out various areas that he was authorized to investigate. And that later became public as part of the Manafort court hearings. And, you know, that is also largely redacted, but I did think it was interesting that he said he was investigating Manafort, particularly for whether he had any collusion. And he did use the term collusion there. Rosenstein did in this memo. So I have seen it there.
Well, Andrew, we're going to say goodbye to you, and I thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. That's Andrew Prokop, and again, senior correspondent at Vox, and he's been covering the Mueller investigation. Quinta Jurassic staying with us for the rest of the hour, managing editor of Lawfare. And joining us now is David Korn. He is Mother Jones's Washington bureau chief. He's an on-air analyst for MSNBC, co-author with Michael Isikoff, who I think is on MSNBC while I'm talking to you, of a book called Russian Roulette, The Inside Story of Putin's War on America and the Election of Donald Trump. David Korn, nice to have you back with us on Radio Times.
Good to be with you.
And to our listeners, again, you can join the conversation. That phone number, 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. David, we were talking in some detail about Flynn and also Manafort, and I do want to move on to Cohen. But what do you make so far of just the behavior, the relationship between the Mueller investigation and Flynn and Manafort?
Well, I mean, we're getting to a crunch time here where we're going to see more of what Flynn did, what he was investigated for. A lot of it was redacted, but I think that will eventually come out at some point. And with Manafort, the special counsel was supposed to lay out today how he lied, and that may get into details of what he was being investigated for. So we're kind of waiting, and all these filings, Mueller tends to have the option of being minimalist or maximalist, and being maximalist with the information, but also redacting some of it. So we're getting bits and pieces. This is not, you know, full reporting. It's not his job to do a full report on what he's found. He's doing this within the system of prosecuting criminal cases. That's a very imperfect way of getting out information. It's not the same thing as an independent commission or a decent, effective congressional investigation. So we all have our faces pushed up against the window. Sometimes it's a little foggy.
Yes.
Trying to see what we can make of what Mueller has found out.
David, we're going to call you back and see if we can get you on a better phone line. There's kind of a hum on the line, and I just want to make sure that we've got a better connection. Quinta, and we'll call you right back, and then we'll get you back on the air. Quinta, let me go back to you, and I do want to talk about Michael Cohen, and again, known as Donald Trump's fixer. He did plead guilty to lying to Congress about a Trump hotel deal in Moscow, also pleaded earlier this year guilty to a series of financial crimes and also campaign violations. How significant a player is Michael Cohen?
So it depends which investigation you're talking about,
true,
which is a pretty amazing thing to say about the president's former lawyer. So let me start with the Trump Tower. So that was the charges of lying to Congress that Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to last week. And we know from that Cohen seems to have been very intimately involved with this effort to build a Trump-branded property in Moscow, which, according to BuzzFeed and a couple other media organizations, reportedly involved an effort to gift Vladimir Putin with a $50 million penthouse apartment in the tower.
Yeah, $50 million penthouse, but nonetheless, just to underscore that. Now, go ahead, Quinta.
Yes, absolutely. And so Cohen seems to be very closely involved in that. The question is to what extent that connects to the president, right? And we don't have a good sense of whether or not Trump was aware of specifically what he was doing in that case.
And dates mattered here because he had originally said that this deal was off in January of 2016, when actually it was off at the end of June. So those almost 6 months there, that was a significant omission, if I should say, on his part.
Yes, absolutely. Because, you know, by June 2016, Trump is about to clinch, you know, he's about to be formally nominated as the Republican nominee for president of the United States. And he's still planning to go ahead, or his organization is planning to go ahead with, you know, building a branded property, coordinating with Russian officials to build this property.
David Korn, we have you back. And I want to quote you to our listeners. This is about Cohen. Trump was secretly interacting with Putin's office in order to make money while he was campaigning for president. What do you make then of what we have learned from Michael Cohen about this deal to build a Trump Tower in Moscow?
I think this is the biggest political conflict of interest we know of in modern American history.
Really?
Think about it. A fellow running for president, he's leading the Republican pack at the time, is secretly trying to build a multi-million dollar project in Moscow that will have his name on it, that will make him millions. And what does he do? He reaches out to Putin's own office for help in making this happen. Well, at the same time, while campaigning, he's being asked, what would you do about Russia? What do you think about Putin? He happens to say very positive things about Putin. Putin likes me. I like Putin. We need a better relationship. While he's asking Putin for help making money. So he's telling the public, the voters, he's an American first candidate. But really, he is not telling them that while I'm talking to you about Putin, I'm trying to get him to help me make money. So that is a gigantic conflict of interest. Put everything else aside that we know about the Trump-Russia scandal, and that in and of itself in some ways is bigger than Watergate and bigger than any other scandal we've had. And it's just atrocious that, you know, he got away with it. No one knew about this until after the campaign. No Republican. I am still waiting for any elected Republican to say boo about this, that Trump, you know, bamboozled the public and was trying to line his own pocket. And his, you know, there's no way he could have been critical of Putin while trying to build a project in Moscow. So that in and of itself should be a major scandal, but it also sends a message to Putin that Trump wants to do business with him. So this is happening right as the Putin plan to attack the American election is underway. Hackers are into the DNC at this point. They're trying to get into other prominent Democrats like John Podesta. That happens, you know, his account gets hacked in March 2016 while this Russian deal is still underway with Trump. And so while the Putin's plan is beginning, Trump is sending a message, I'm your man. I want to do business with you. This is obviously encouraging Putin, or at least not telling him, you know, that Trump will be tough on him. So we go into the summer, and when the news comes out that the Russians have been hacking the DNC and then the material gets released, what does Trump and his minions do? They say it's a hoax. It's not happening. It's not the Russians. So again, that sends a message to the Russians. God, Trump is really on our side. As we're attacking the United States, he's on our side, and he even has in his top three campaign people, Manafort, Trump Jr., and Jared Kushner, have a meeting with a Russian emissary who they are told is bringing them dirt, whether she did or she didn't, but they're told that she's bringing them dirt as part of a Kremlin plot, obviously a secret plot, to help Trump win the election.
Well,
and after that, they still keep saying this is not happening. So this is, you know, this is the type of collusion that we don't really discuss, but it is, in a way, helping the Russians get away with it.
David French is not, he's a conservative commentator, obviously not an elected official, but he said evidence that Trump was pursuing a personal relationship with a chief geopolitical foe after he wrapped up the GOP nomination. Essentially, David Corn underscoring what you just said.
Yeah, well, I agree with David French, and he's a conservative who's been very clear on this, and he's been supportive of the Robert Mueller investigation because he's being driven by principles, not by politics and partisanship. And as I said a moment ago, I have not seen any Republican. He wouldn't call himself a Republican as much as he would call himself a conservative. I've been on panels with David, and I respect him much, although we disagree on
sure.
policy matters. But I haven't seen any Republican, any leaders of the, you know, investigative committees
say, hold on, God, hold on, only because we have to take a very short break. We'll get back to our conversation. David Corn and Quinta Jurecic. Stay with us. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane, and we've been talking about Michael Flynn, Michael Cohen, Paul Manafort, all in the crosshairs of the Mueller investigation, and all have been affiliated with either President Trump or candidate Trump. And again, our guests are Quinta Jurecic, and she is managing editor of Lawfare, David Corn, Mother Jones, Washington Bureau Chief, also co-author of a book called Russian Roulette, the Inside Story of Putin's War on America and the Election of Donald Trump. Let me play a thing that this is President Trump speaking to reporters on November 29th, and he's talking about Michael Cohen. This is after Michael Cohen pleaded guilty to lying to Congress about plans to build a Trump Tower in Moscow.
He was convicted of various things unrelated to us. He was given a fairly long jail sentence, and he's a weak person. And by being weak, unlike other people that you watch, he's a weak person. And what he's trying to do is get a reduced sentence.
And let me read a tweet. This is December 3rd from the president. This is about Roger Stone. He says, I will never testify against Trump. Quote, this statement was recently made by Roger Stone, essentially stating that he will not be forced by a rogue and out of control prosecutor to make up lies and stories about, quote, President Trump. Nice to know that some people still have guts. Quinta, let me go back to you. Is this obstruction of justice? Is this witness tampering?
Yeah, so Susan Hennessy, who's the executive editor of Lawfare, and I have made the argument that at least with regard to the Roger Stone tweet, it is. And the argument there is essentially that the witness tampering statute forbids what's called corrupt persuasion of someone who is a witness, may be a witness, trying to persuade them to, you know, not cooperate with law enforcement, not help with an investigation. And our argument was essentially that, you know, this is Trump saying, don't tell the truth, you know, don't cooperate. He's not saying that literally, But that can be inferred from his comments. Now, the real question is actually currently there's a disagreement within courts in the country as to whether that would count as witness tampering in the tweet itself. So in some areas of the country, that would count as witness tampering because, you know, anything that you do that has the result of impeding an investigation, if you do it with the intent to impede the investigation, could be witness tampering. In other areas of the country, the act itself that you take, there has to be something wrong with that too. So, for example, if I bribe you to not talk to the police, that would be witness tampering. But if I say you should assert your Fifth Amendment right to remain silent, that wouldn't be. So the tweet, it would sort of depend where it falls, you know, which court would be determining it. But I think the real takeaway is, you know, whether it would be technically witness tampering in any jurisdiction, it is close enough to witness tampering that the president's lawyers are probably not very happy that he tweeted that.
Interesting. Let me just give out that phone number again, and it's 1-888-477-9499. That's the number to call to join our conversation. You can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. David, let me go back to you. Why has Jared Kushner, I'm not sure what the word to use is, but why does he seem to be scot-free so far? And I say that because he also tried to create this back channel to Russia via the Russian ambassador to the United States. He also suggested that Comey get fired. How do you see his role?
Well, first, I just want to go back to the quote you played from the president. Because it's important to say every time you play that quote, he's lying. It's a big word, but he's lying when he says Michael Cohen's crimes have nothing to do with us, with me. The two things that he pleaded guilty to is basically paying off Stormy Daniels. Who is he paying her off for? Donald Trump. In the, you know, plea deal, plea documents, it says that it even cites Trump as being a conspirator, a co-conspirator in the criminal conspiracy to violate campaign law. The president of the United States has been, you know, credibly accused in a court of violating federal law. And then the other thing he pled guilty to was lying to Congress to cover up, you know, the extent of the Russia deal that Trump was doing. So when he says what he pled guilty to has nothing to do with me, when Trump says that, it is an outright lie. And again, Republicans, Fox News, does anyone say anything about that? No, we have to say it, and then we sound like we're being hyperbolic. But it is a proven lie. Now, you asked about Jared Kushner.
About Jared Kushner, yep.
And, you know, and we know that he was involved in the Trump Tower meeting with a Russian emissary and was told that it was part of a secret plot to help Trump. We know that he tried to set up a secret back channel with the Russians from their embassy during the transition period, which is completely crazy and nutty. Now, both of those two things may not be in and of themselves illegal, so therefore we might not see information coming out of Mueller about it, because remember, his job is to prosecute crimes. People who did inappropriate actions, people who even did things that might be considered acts of betrayal, they may not actually be crimes. We know that Jared Kushner has testified behind closed doors to Congress. Issues have been raised by Democratic members of the House, of the House Intelligence Committee, that people, that prominent people came before them and did not fully tell the truth. And we saw Michael Cohen get prosecuted for lying to Congress. You know, we have to see Jared Kushner's testimony to get a sense about how candid he was, and whether and what questions were asked of him, and whether Republicans allowed for any follow-up. So I would, you know, not say that he or anyone else is out of the woods, because, once again, we don't have a clear view. The House Intelligence Committee investigation bottomed out. It was all about protecting Trump and raising phony issues about FISA warrants and the Steele memos. And the Senate Intelligence Committee, you know, is missing in action in the sense that they're not holding any public hearings. They haven't said much publicly. We're still waiting for that. But there's no independent force out there, no independent commission whose job it is to tell us the full story, which might include, or presumably would include, Jared Kushner's actions, which may not be illegal, but still would, the public would still should have a right to know.
Well, and I wonder, Quinta, picking up on what David just said there, and we know people have been tracking the president's misstatements, or however you want to call them, lies, whatever, exaggerations. You've got Roger Stone, self-described dirty trickster. You've got Jerome Corsi, a conspiracy theorist. You've got Manafort and his track record, Sam Nunberg. I'm thinking of all the people that we are learning about and their relationship to the truth. Does that make this any more complicated?
Yeah, I think it does. If only because, you know, what we're kind of seeing is a group of people who, as you say, have this very attenuated relationship to the truth, either because their stock in trade is essentially conspiracy theories, or, you know, in the case of the president, his everyday way of speaking is just completely disconnected to the facts, I would argue. And you're seeing this group of people essentially run full speed ahead into a group of prosecutors who are, as we've seen, empowered to hold people to the facts, hold people to what they know, and if they think people have lied intentionally, prosecute them. And so we're really seeing this clash of cultures. We've seen that Mueller is obviously ready and willing to use the statute, his statutory authority to prosecute people for lying to him and for lying to Congress, as we've seen in Cohen's case.
Right.
I think the real question is to what extent the kind of edifice of falsehoods that the president, Stone, Corsi, all the others that you mentioned have built up in the public space interacts with this group of people's interactions with the special counsel's office. You know, if, for example, Jerome Corsi is indicted for lying to the special counsel, as it seems may possibly happen, I don't want to speculate, but there's some documents about that in the public. Whether Corsi has been sufficiently successful in kind of seeding this idea that the president tweeted about, that he was entrapped, that the lie has sort of taken on a life of its own in the public sphere.
David, let me go back to you. And you were given actually the Steele dossier before we learned about it. And based on what you know, and this, of course, was from Christopher Steele, who was an MS-16 operator, how much of that has been proven true? How much is still uncorroborated at this point?
Well, I mean, people who are interested should really read all the memos, 30 or so pages. And they cover a lot of different ground. They cover, you know, information from inside the Kremlin about what various Russian officials thought about the Russian attack on the elections and whether it went too far or whether there would be blowback on the Kremlin. And, you know, again, it's all material that is not confirmed. You know, a source says this, a source says that. But to me, the most impressive thing about the memos is really the first memo that was written in June 2016, in which, you know, lays out that the Russians have had a plan to cultivate and co-opt Trump for years, and it includes dangling business deals in front of him. We just learned about this major business deal that was dangled in front of Trump while he was running for president, and it caused him to seek help from Putin. So that lines up. They talked about how there was an exchange of information between the Trump campaign and the Russians. And we know about the Trump Tower meeting. The people participated say the information they got from the Russian emissary was not worthy of anything. Maybe they're telling the truth, but it did set up this channel. And we do know that George Papadopoulos tried to make connections with Putin's office on behalf of the campaign. We know that Carter Page, a foreign policy advisor of the campaign, like Papadopoulos, did talk to Russian officials when he was there in July. So on the big picture of the Steele memos, which, you know, no one had said publicly at the time, was that there was something going on, that Russia was trying to make contacts with the Trump campaign. And we learned later that the Trump campaign was amenable to getting assistance and from the Kremlin and being in touch with Putin's office, even though they kept denying that anything untoward was happening. Or, as Paul Manafort said at the Democratic convention in July, We have no contacts with the Russians. Trump has no contact. I have no contact. He only owed $18 million to a Russian oligarch at the time. That's a whole other story while he was managing the Trump campaign. So it's a, you know, it's a complete, you know, Quinta used the word edifice. I mean, it's like a pile of you know what that they just, you know, keep throwing out from the beginning. That's lies, 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 calling it a misrepresentation or false statement is, you know, it's being kind because Manafort knew he owed $18 million to a Russian oligarch, and he says we have no Russian contacts. Trump knew he had tried to do a deal with Russia, yet he said during the campaign, we stayed away from Russia. So these are, you know, it is a complete, you know, cover-up, false disinformation campaign that lines up with Moscow's disinformation campaign. I mean, what we know already, this is what you may hear a note of frustration in my voice.
I do.
What we know already is it should be a gigantic scandal. There has been collusion, and the fact that, you know, there are people out there saying, well, prove what happened. It's in the public record. We see what's happened. And yet still, it seems we're stuck in these tribal politics where you have to prove reality, and which you obviously can't do because Trump and Kellyanne Conway and the others are talking about alternative facts and are just blanketly denying that the sky is blue.
Quinta, if you want to respond to that, but let me also put something else out there, out here, and this is from The Atlantic. They interviewed Rudolph Giuliani, one of Trump's lawyers, and he told The Atlantic answering those questions was a nightmare. These were the questions that the Mueller people put to the president. Answering those questions was a nightmare. It took him, that would be Trump, about 3 weeks to do what would normally take 2 days. As a lawyer yourself, Quinta, I'm curious about what Rudolph Giuliani is telling us there.
Well, I should be clear. I'm not a lawyer.
Oh, you're not. Okay.
I just write about legal issues. But I think that to go back to David's point, he's absolutely right. That look, I mean, there are many details of what happened on the Trump campaign side. Organization side that we don't yet know, but it is absolutely clear when we look at it from the Russian side that what you see is a concerted campaign to reach out to the Trump campaign and organization to see if they were open to support, whether in the Trump Moscow project, whether in Don Jr.'s Trump Tower meeting, through Manafort. There are all these different threads. And what we see is it's not clear how coordinated this was on the Trump side, but there's absolutely a willingness to accept that outreach, though it may have been, you know, bungled in particular instances. Going to Giuliani's comments.
Yeah, about 30 seconds. I hate to say that. Go ahead, Quinta.
Sure. Going to Giuliani's comments, I mean, it's hard to know what to take at face value, but that statement that there's just, you know, it took so long for them to put these answers together, connected with what we know about the president's falsehoods, call it lying, does not inspire a lot of confidence, let's say that much.
David, 10 seconds if you could.
What we know already is quite damning. So we lose sight of that as we wait for new information. And that, in some ways, is a partial victory for Trump.
Well, David Korn, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
My pleasure.
And Quinta Jurecic, thank you for joining us as well.
Pleasure to be here.
And she's managing editor of Lawfare. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times, and you can find out more about the program. You can download a podcast of the show, find us on Facebook, and follow us on Twitter. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern, with help today from Susan Greenbaum. I'm Artie Moss-Cohen. Thank you for joining us. I want to tell you more about our Facebook group that we just started this week. This is a place you'll be able to carry on the conversation after the show. In fact, there is a conversation we posted there from yesterday. Also, today we will be offering some exclusive content, and this is from Radio Times producer John Ahrens. He's got a movie recommendation for you. You can go to our Facebook page and sign up for our Facebook group. You can also just type Radio Times listeners in the search bar, and that'll get you in. Hope you can do it.